Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and today, for 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars. So if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. 602-508-0960. We're here for 2 hours, and this is a car show where you can call in and just give us the make, model, and year, and maybe the miles of the car we're talking about. And then from there, we'll decide that we're going to talk about symptoms, and symptoms with respect to exactly what you've got, you know, problems with, and that will help us out determining what the heck we're talking about. So, 602-508-0960, sitting next to me here on the left. What's your name?
I barely made it.
Hold on a minute. Let me turn on your microphone. You what?
I barely made it.
That's pretty much the title of your life.
Hey, I'm here. That's all that counts.
No, it isn't, because no. Gil, if you hadn't made it here on time and I was late, then Gil would be using really bad words at you.
I know he would. You're
but
right.
But he doesn't. He saves those for everybody else.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if he uses bad words.
I don't
not,
think so.
Probably not. But we
not
can't even.
Can
you,
What'd you say, Gil?
Not that no one can hear.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They opened up in 1976. They have three locations to serve you: Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. S&S has a complete set of tires in many different brands, in many different sizes. So, if you have tires that you need for your farm equipment, your golf equipment, your lawn and garden equipment, your ATVs, trailers, commercial and construction tires, or your normal passenger car or light truck tires, they have it all. What really makes it nice about S&S is you can go in there and get an out-the-door price for the low tires, the medium-quality tires, and the high-quality tires, and then you can make your mind up what you want to do. That's kind of neat. So if you're looking for new tires on anything you own, if you visit one of the S&S tire locations in the West Valley, you'll get good service. And you'll get a menu that few others can actually offer you. Okay, we're going to talk about the one case I've got right now, which is shop number one does an oil change. And it's on a turbocharged car. And 3,051 miles later, the car ends up at another shop, which in this case just happens to be a dealer. And the dealer determines that the engine was overfilled with oil. So their paperwork says that they found it 2 quarts over on oil, but they only drained one out. In fact, the car holds 4.5 quarts, and the invoice from shop number one says they put in 5 quarts. So yes, it was overfilled, but it was by 0.5 quart. I didn't even know this car took 4.5 quarts. And chances are all of our staff would have put in 5, too. So they sent the customer back, and the inside of the intake and the turbocharger is all filled with oil. So they send the customer back to the first shop. The first shop changes the oil again and puts exactly the amount in. There was some issues with fouled spark plugs, so the shop put in new spark plugs. The car was driven for some period of time, and it still didn't perform right. It went back to the dealer. The dealer did some more. We need to have this done. The car goes back to shop number one, and they do whatever they're told. And they put in a second set of spark plugs. And we're also fouling the spark plugs because we're aspirating a lot of oil. And we also have a check engine light on now, which is number one cylinder is misfiring or not contributing to the power of the engine. So it goes back to the dealer for the third time, and the paperwork says that the warranty... the warranty will not cover this, and the warranty, therefore, is void or something like that. And they blame it on this overfilled condition. But inside the paperwork that they provided the customer, they said that the entire intake is full of oil and the turbo. Okay? Now, keep in mind, this car went 3,051 miles with this supposed overfilled oil, overfilled engine. Now, you know that a turbocharger packs air into the engine.
Yes.
So instead of just a normally aspirated engine just sucks air in, we add a little fuel, that goes to the engine, and boom, we have an explosion and we have power, right? So a normally aspirated engine is a sucking engine. So it's sucking all the time. Of turbocharged engine, we're actually shoving air down the throat of the motor. So if you take an old-fashioned canister vacuum cleaner, on one end you got a hose that sucks, and on the other end you got an exit mm-hmm. with air coming out. So if you were to take the suck part and put it over the exit part, that is a turbocharger. So you're sucking, but you're pressurizing it. So one of the concerns I have is this vehicle, and it only has like 30,000 miles on it. This vehicle went 3,000 with this supposed oil change. But you can't blow oil upstream. Okay?
Okay.
So when the motor's running, we have oil pressure, and we have the turbo spinning. So we're, according to them, we're blowing oil upstream, and we're covering the intake and the turbo. So I'm thinking to myself, when the engine's off, then there is no overfilled issue. Nothing's happening. We have no oil pressure. We have no turbo spin. We have nothing going on. Now, I'm going to ask them how they think that this overfilled condition caused this problem. And now they want to take the engine apart to determine what's wrong with cylinder number one. So this is going to get big and ugly. Meanwhile, the lady who owns the car calls her insurance company. And she says, I don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. So the insurance company says, well, let's get involved. So then they call Phoenix, because they're way back east. And I guess there's some people had nominated me saying he'll do a good job for you. So I look at it and I say, we're not doing an engine teardown. Because number one cylinder has been saturated with oil. So the rings are probably stuck, and we can put a chemical in there and get that. We should be able to get that cylinder back up to par. It has 90 pounds compression. All the rest of them have 140. So there's a 50-pound difference. But one is down to 90, but two, three, and four, I'll have 140. But here's the problem. The problem is when the turbo goes bad and we force oil to the turbo shaft, the turbo shaft is a shaft that's maybe 6 inches long, and we're going to lube both ends plus the middle. So because from the turbo all the way through the tube to the mouth of the engine is covered in oil, and we're blowing air through that tube, my question is how the heck do we get oil going upwind? Mm-hmm. How do we get oil from this point, which is the mouth of the motor, all the way into the turbo? And the answer is because the turbo failed.
Mm, I see.
The oil's coming from the turbo.
Steve is your first caller, Steve.
So the question kind of is this. The hard part is it's not likely. Well, there's two possibilities. And I'm going to do an inspection on Monday. And here's the deal. If the left, I'm going to look at one thing and one thing only. And it's either going to be the left hand, so to speak, says this is who's at fault, and the right hand says this is who at fault. There's no question. I'm going to look at one thing, and when I look at this one thing, it's going to tell me whose fault it is. Mm-hmm. So number two, then I'll write my report to the insurance company, and they're going to share it with their customer and stuff like that. But I wonder to myself, is this two young people who have no experience, because there's a service writer involved and a technician involved at the dealership, is this two young people that just simply don't know the difference and don't know about turbocharged engines and don't know about problems? Because the way they wrote up their three repair orders is like, we're walking away from this. This is no warranty. We're not helping you. This is someone else's problem. And this all has to do with this overfilled engine. What they haven't been able to answer, because there's no answer for it, is if we overfilled the engine, how the heck did we blow oil upstream in a tornado? And how did the engine aspirate this oil? So, you know, and I know that the answer is probably going to be, well, the PCV valve sucked the oil out of the valve cover and ran it through the engine. I'll accept that. But it's going to go from the PCV valve directly into the intake manifold, and it's not going to go to the turbo compressor side, which is the air going out of the turbo and being stuffed into the engine. So no matter what the situation is, there's no way that oil can go upstream, mm-hmm. especially with a tornado, okay?
Okay.
So we either have two inexperienced people who simply don't know cars, Or worse yet, we have two people that want to put an engine in a car under warranty because business is slow. I think it's 50-50. I don't know the answer to that.
Yep.
But I think if I had to bet big money, $6 or $7, I would bet that it's one or the other. And that happens in our industry as well. So the independent market has the same problem. When there's a situation where somebody makes something much bigger than it is, you wonder about their motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important thing.
Yeah.
So that's one of the cases that I just got. Refresh my memory on the other one.
Oh, I can't even remember right now.
Okay. Well, I can remember. It's the accelerator pedal.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have several of those because we've had that. That's kind of been in the news and stuff.
So I'm going to drive a car for I don't know how long. I'm going to do 200, 250 miles on it, and I'm prepared for that. Let me ask you a question real quick. If the throttle sticks on your car, what do you do? There's only one answer. What do you do?
I think you told me to put it in neutral.
Period.
Yes.
Because here's the deal. If you shut the engine off, you have no more power steering and power brakes.
Right.
But if you just shift into neutral, yes, the motor's going to race because the throttle's stuck. But we don't care. If the motor blows up, we don't care. And realistically, from probably 1996 north of there, all the cars have an upper limiter where the computer will not let them completely run wild into the destruction zone.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll limit the RPM of the engine. So you're driving down the road, maybe you're on a hill and you've pushed it to the floor and you let go of the throttle and the throttle stuck wide open. So you don't panic and you look for where you're going to pull off. Then you just slide it into neutral. The motor's going to race. No one cares. You're going to steer off to the side of the road. You're going to have power steering and brakes. You're going to slow down and you're going to stop. And at that point, you're going to turn the key off and you're done.
Okay.
And you're safe.
And I'm safe. Okay.
So that's how
you... So you do like me.
No. Your car, the throttle's going to stick and the brakes are going to fail at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
All righty. 602-508-0960. Steve, when we come back, you're our first caller. We'll be back right after this.
Hello.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and my wife, Renee, is sitting here to the left of me, and we're here at your service, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. They're at I-17 in Deer Valley. They're a family-owned and full-service auto repair shop. They've served the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. And no matter what your repair needs are, you can visit Tom and his staff, and they're going to guide you the best they can. They may very well send you somewhere else where you're better served, or they might just raise their hand and say, we're really skilled in this repair. Their technicians are ASE Master, and they get the job done right. So if you're in that area of I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair is a great place to go. If you don't already have one that you really love, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Steve, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark and Renee. Always interesting to listen to your program. I learn a lot. I missed the opener from your tire recommendation, which actually speaks to my particular problem this morning.
Okay.
I have a 2014 Toyota Tundra 4x4. Only got 11,000 miles on it. My original equipment tires are beginning to crack and check and right above the rim, right along where the nomenclature is on the tire. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to replace those in pretty short order. My question was, with the P-Metric on that truck as the original equipment tire, what about putting an LT tire on there that would be a little more capable in terms of forest road performance and light towing?
You can do that. First of all, there's two issues here on my plate. If that Tundra's a 14, then let's assume the tires were made in 13 and it took them a year to get to your truck in the assembly plant.
They were made the 23rd week of 2014. They were made not quite 3 years ago.
Okay. If you really have cracks on what we call the bead ring, then I would go to the manufacturer and see what they're going to do for you first.
I already talked to them. and they are willing to do an adjustment on those tires. I talked to their main office in Nashville.
Okay.
And the person I spoke to said, yeah, we can do an adjustment on that.
Okay, the question then becomes, what's my out-of-pocket expense? Because here's the deal. You bought the tires with the truck, so you don't really have a stated figures. So they're going to take some measurements on the tread, and they're going to say, well, you've used 20% of the tire. So therefore, the tire itself is $200, and so we're going to give you a 20% discount, which is $40. And so you're going to owe us $160 for each tire, and you're going to say, why don't you go pound sand? Because that's not fair. But on the other hand, if they say, you know what, we're going to adjust from $80 a tire and give you a 20%, then we got 16 off of 80, we're at $74 a piece, and you might choose to do that. So the question is you don't really know what to do until you talk to them about the dollars and cents. Now let me tell you, as far as the LT tire is concerned, on the sticker on your door, it's going to give you a front axle weight and a rear axle weight. GVWR, that's gross vehicle weight. GF and GF, or R is rear. So you're going to look at front and back. Let's assume that the front axle and the back axle both have 4,000 pounds. That means each tire has to hold at least 1,000 pounds left and 1,000 pounds right. Does that math make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. So your LT tires will handle that with no problem. I would try to stay with the same P metric numbers, so 235, 75, 15. I try to stay with what your stock is. Yes, you can go to a LT truck. You're going to sacrifice ride, and you're going to sacrifice comfort because the P metric's a much softer tire. The LT's a little tougher. You're right on a four-wheel drive. The LT might prevent a sidewall cut more than the P metric, but if you took the P metric to its maximum inflation of 35, then you'd probably avoid some of those sidewall cuts because the tire would be stronger. But if you take the LT to its maximum inflation, which is 44, you're going to hate the ride on that truck. So those are the two things that you're going to have. Both of them are going to give you the same fuel economy. But
I was actually considering going with a higher load rating tire. The load rating on the P metric that's on the truck is, I think, a 112. I was thinking about going maybe up to a 116, or maybe a D load range on these tires. I understand I'm going to lose some ride quality and some fuel economy, but I do like the LT tires for the toughness factor that you pointed out. I've had some experience in Arizona over the years, and usually four-wheel drive usually means that you just break down farther from help.
Yeah.
But
I wanted to
get a tougher tire, and I wanted to stay as close to the original size as possible. They're a 255/70/18, which is kind of an oddball size. Would I have any warranty problems if I went with a 265/70/18, which is a much more available tire, and you know, across most.
Somebody has to do the math, because we need a height, a diameter, or a circumference in order to determine what those two cars will avoid your warranty. If you change the tire dimensions, it's going to change the odometer, speedometer, and yes, that will create a problem for you. As far as you bumping up, you can't take a 4,000-pound axle, which is two 2,000-pound tires, my wife just reminded me, two 2,000-pound axles. You can't put 3,500 or 4,000-pound tires and expect that you're going to haul 8,000 pounds on an axle that was designed for 4,000 pounds. So that 4,000 pounds is a number written in concrete. You can't change that. So to step up in tires for the load range, I don't think you're going to gain anything, because that's not going to let you put a gooseneck behind that Toyota Tundra. So
I understand that, but my concern was, given some of the places that I tend to go with trucks, my concern was with the actual toughness of the tire rather than increasing. I'm not looking to increase towing capacity as much as I'm looking to increase toughness.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. How many tires have you cut in all your life? Off-road?
Probably three or four.
Okay. Do you hunt every year, season?
I'm out in the woods and out in the backcountry every year, yeah. It's damned inconvenient, you know, and I just in my experience, the tougher tires, the LT tires typically hold up better.
Okay,
but
I'm not going to agree with you on that because we may and you know we're seeing 10,000 cars and trucks a year, and we may see one or two tires with the sidewall cut annually. You take those 10,000 cars and just say, let's say that they're all 10,000 miles a year. We're looking at 1 million miles. And so maybe your luck is just that bad, or maybe you're actually testing the limits of the truck. I don't know the answer to that, but I just think that I think you can do whatever you want to do, but I wouldn't go to the LTs. I think once you get to the price of the LTs, that'll chase you away anyway. And if you're willing to...
That really wasn't a factor. I mean, I'm looking at these tires... you know, like I've got 11,000 on the current set, you know, and I'm thinking they're not going to last more than another two or three before those checks get really objectionable.
Okay. Well, those are decisions that you can make. We've already hashed this out, and I'm saying to you, I don't have a preference. I've given you my opinion, and I'm saying to you, it's okay to do either one. The only thing I'm cautioning you about is have the shop do the math so that the diameter, the circumference, and the diameter times pi, or the circumference, or the overall height of the tire is the same or close to the same. And otherwise, you have a warranty issue because the speedometer, odometer is off. So I got to move on. Let's go to Nick. Nick, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Yeah, how you doing, Mark? I've got a 06 Chevy Colorado 2.8 engine, 5-speed. I got 575,000 miles on it, and I'm getting random misfire.
Okay.
Could it possibly be the catalytic converter since it's the original catalytic converter?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
A random misfire is that when the computer and the crank sensor and the cam sensor are looking at the spin of the motor, that they see a lag in a power where we're misfiring one of the cylinders. The very first thing you do on your 2.8 liter is what cylinder is it at real quick?
It's just random misfire. It doesn't give a cylinder.
Okay. All right. I got to take a break in 15 seconds. You stay right there. Bob, you're next. We'll be back. I'm going to walk this up to the top of the hour, which is in 10 seconds, and then we're going to be back in about 3 minutes. And, Nick, I'm going to finish with you, and Bob, you'll be second. And we got open lines 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Renee Salem sitting here next to me, and I'm at your service, 602-508-0960. And like I promised, Nick, we're going to go right back to you. Nick, when somebody pulled the code on this, do you remember what the code was for the random misfire?
300.
Okay. I can't answer your question exactly because I would have to plug a scanner in to see if it would give me more than that. A PO300 is typically a random misfire, but if it's PO301 or 2 or 3, it usually gives us a cylinder. Do you have a distributor underneath the hood of that motor, or have you...
Coil packs.
On top of the spark plugs?
What I did is I had a hose come off the back of the engine, and it was blowing oil all over the engine, and some of them got down into the spark plugs. So we changed the boots and the spark plugs on all four cylinders.
Okay, well...
For about 4 days, it seemed to be that I drive like 370 miles a day. So it seemed to be when I ran premium gas in it all 4 days that the light would, you know, check engine light would stay off. Now, one thing I did notice, this engine only has 100,000 miles on it. I noticed like if I'm in fifth gear, kind of like 2,000 RPMs and I want to put the pedal to the metal, you kind of get that noise where it's straining to pick up power.
Well, is it a ping or not?
No, just a louder engine-type noise,
okay.
Not a ping or nothing. It's just kind of like if you were blowing...
Okay. Well, let me just save us some time here. You've got a random misfire code. I don't care about the premium gas. That doesn't help me. That doesn't bring anything to the table to help solve the problem. You tell me that you've replaced the four boots and the spark plugs on the coil packs. which is a big problem. And do you have the check engine light now again or not?
It's been off for like 4 days.
Okay. Well, here's what most people don't understand, because we don't do a good job of explaining it. But it takes a while for the code to come on, and it takes a while for the code to go off. And folks will bring their car in with a code. Now, we'll do our best to clear the code, but there's always cars that you can't clear the code, or there's cars that just won't let you clear the code, or if this random misfire, it's going to say, well, you can clear me, but I'm still going to watch the motor for the next 2 hours or whatever. But there's not instant gratification, typically, when you end up with a check engine light. So the fact that it's been gone for four days and it hasn't come back on, I think that's what you tried to accomplish. I think that's what you wanted to accomplish. As far as the noise at 2,000 RPMs climbing out of fifth gear, I don't know how fast you're going, but 2,000 RPMs, you're not going really fast. And if you're lugging it, then you should downshift to bring that tachometer needle up to 3,500 or maybe even 4 grand. So I'm not quite sure that go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be going like 65 miles an hour at 2,000 RPMs in fifth gear.
Okay. So what's the red line on your 2.8 liter?
6,000.
Okay. So you're a long way from the red line. So
oh, yeah.
I can't deal with, well, it's feeling like it's struggling, because I don't know what that feels like. And if it's not a ping and you say it's laboring, but you didn't say it was missing or bucking.
2 minutes.
So I'm not really capable of coming to that conclusion. If all you've got is that, and it's not pinging, and you can go back to regular unleaded, and the code doesn't come back, then I think you're okay. And I don't think there's any other symptoms for us to continue to do anything to your truck. If you want to make it, and the catalytic converter has nothing to do with a random misfire. Nothing whatsoever. It has a whole series of codes for itself. So it's not like you're not going to get a code for the cat, because you are going to get a code for the cat. So I think you won, and I think spark plugs and boots would have been the very first thing on my mind. So good luck to you. Let's go to Bob. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Bob, drop. Let's go to Keith.
Keith. Keith, good morning. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Oh, my pleasure. Hey, 2006 Dodge Dakota, 130,000 miles on it. It's got the Magnum engine in it. Just failed emissions on me, and I took it to my normal mechanic, and he said he got two sensors, catalytic converters or whatever. It was before this, it was showing I think it was a 420 code error, so the engine light was on. So he took care of all that stuff. He said it should pass everything, but this is now the third time in about 2 years that he cleared an engine light for me for this type of thing, and the ABS and brake light came on afterwards. What's the correlation there?
Jesus.
You're having some crazy stuff this morning.
Did I hear you say that he replaced both O2 sensors and the cat?
In years past, yeah. So everything, he said he double-checked everything. Everything should be fine. He didn't want to spend more money fixing anything for me that he thinks he didn't need to.
Well, let me just decipher that for you. He says he doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what to do next. That's what he's telling you. There's no excuse for that kind of talk. First of all, I haven't done two O2 sensors and the catalytic converter on a single car in probably all my life. When you get a code, the code tells you, I see a problem in the state of Ohio. And you can't just drop the mother of all bombs on the state of Ohio and figure that that's going to be the problem or that's going to take care of it. You got to go in and find the city and the street and the address. So good technicians are going to look at the O2 sensors or the temperature sensors, and if the front temperature sensor says 180 and the back one says 180, then you go down there with a temperature gun to make sure they're telling you the truth, and if they're both at 180, then we're not lighting the cat. So then the next question is why aren't we lighting the cat? Then you look at the tailpipe, and you got CO coming out of there that might as well just be raw gas with a bunch of HC with it. So you go, oh, we're flooding the catalytic converter with lots of fuel. So let's cut the fuel off underneath the hood and see if the cat will light. So you cut the fuel off underneath the hood. You take it out on the highway. After 5 minutes, you go back and woo-wee, 560 degrees on the front and 700 on the back. Bingo. That's how it's supposed to work. with respect to your brake light and your ABS light, there is no relationship back and forth. But here's the problem. You're trying to cheat the system by clearing the light, and then you're going and you're failing. They got your number this way. There's a monitor inside that computer, and that monitor wants to see one or two drive cycles. Now, it wants to see this speed, this RPM. It wants to see a couple of cold starts, a couple of hot starts. It wants to see a hard acceleration. It wants to see so many minutes of idle. And you have to go through this drive cycle to clear the monitor. So when you go down, you haven't done a drive cycle because it takes a week to do a drive cycle. So you went down, and the monitor hasn't been reset. They know that. They think that you were right around the corner, you disconnected the negative cable, you cleared the code, you put the cable back on, and you pulled into the emission station. That doesn't work no more. You gotta go through this drive cycle, and you gotta get the monitor to go back asleep and erase its memory. So, you have to fix the problem. And I wanna tell you something, I don't wanna hurt your feelings. There's a lot of people that have mobile mechanics. Well, let me tell you something. If they were good at their trade, they'd be working for me for $75,000 a year. They'd have Monday through Fridays. They'd have a 401k, and I'd pay their health insurance. I've got guys in 37 years that have made well over $100,000. So if he was good, and if he had all the tools and the skills necessary to run his own shop out of the bed of his truck, why wouldn't he work for me for a heck of a lot more money than he's making on the street? So many of those do come and apply, but when you ask for ASC certifications or you give them a couple of hypotheticals, they don't do very well. And then we've determined that they basically are parts changers, and that really is something that disgusts me. So they don't last long, but not all of them. We've had a couple of successes, but most of them don't last long because they throw a part, oh, that didn't work, let's throw another part, oh, that didn't work. Meanwhile, the customer's out there thinking that we're going to fix it for $125 checkout fee, and then all of a sudden the bill's $900. Now we got to take all those parts back off and find the problem. So that's the issue. We have to take a break, but thank you very much. Keith, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem. Right now, it's 47 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you about IMM Auto Service. They've been open since 1972. Why would you choose IMM Auto Service? I'll tell you why. No matter what you've got in your garage, they can handle. And I'll tell you why they're different than even I am. They handle Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. Most of those cars take specialty tools and specialty equipment to fix, diagnose, and repair right. So, and they're 1% cars. They only represent 1% of the cars on the road. However, there's still a lot of them out there. And no matter what you've got in your garage, Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, IMM can do service on those, but they really shine when it comes to the particular cars that we talked about, which is Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles, Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. So IMM is in the northeast part of Tempe. They're just south of the 202, just west of the 101. IMM Imports. David's the owner. Let's go to the phones. Rick, good morning. How can I help you?
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
First of all, thanks for your patience with us. I know you could probably be out fishing right now instead of dealing with us. But.
Oh, no, he does not fish.
I fish with dynamite.
There you go. I have an 08 Hummer H2.
Okay.
And when I pull into, like, my sister's driveway, it's an incline, and when I pull up into the driveway, I'm getting a really pretty good vibration out of the rear end. It sounds like it's on the right-hand side, and I can't figure out what it is. I took it to the shop that I usually go to, and they said it's kind of out of their league. They're more of a mechanic, you know, engine type shop.
Well, let me ask you some questions. When you pull into this driveway, are you in the middle of a right turn or a left turn?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And it doesn't happen at any other time other the upward incline of your sister's driveway.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, number one, I'm going to fix it for you for free. Just don't park in her driveway anymore. And that's the best advice. But I'll tell you what.
And you know what's good about that, too? What? My in-laws are the same way. Okay. Their driveway. So I don't have to go there either.
Oh, boy.
Hey, calm down just a little bit here. My goodness, we're talking about dynamite and fishing and all
I
that
know.
Kind of stuff.
And oh, in-laws. Now the dogs are
barking. Now the dogs are barking.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I need you to do. I need you to come into their neighborhood and go clear to the other side of the street, and I want you to climb the upgrade and the incline straight ahead. So I want you to come and make a 90-degree turn and then drive up straight ahead. I need to know if that's happened, if it happens then. And then I want you to go to a flat area behind Bash's or Safeway on a Sunday morning, and I want you to do really tight turns on to the right and to the left in your Hummer.
Okay.
And I want to know if there's any noise associated with that. I need you to learn how to make it happen every single time, and I want you to explore other ways to make it happen so that you could still determine. Now, you may decide that it's got to be in first gear when I'm climbing the driveway, because when I come to almost a stop and then I turn right, hard right, and I start the incline, and actually my truck's going up at an angle at that particular point. So you need to learn how to make it. I can tell you that the symptoms that you describe only happening on a parking on an incline are nothing that would scare me if you decided that you and I were going to go to Las Vegas together and you wanted me to ride in your Hummer. I wouldn't be scared. But the thing that this kind of a noise, you got to learn how to make it happen. And once you do that, then any good suspension guy's going to take a ride with you. Now, another thing you can do is if you have a shop and he says no, the question to him is well, who's a good undercarriage guy? Who's a good suspension guy? Now, you know that most grocery stores have a dock behind them. And we have one that's not too far away from us, and we take cars over to the dock all the time and either back them up the dock or drive them up the dock just for that kind of thing. So don't be afraid to use the dock behind the grocery store and maybe find one close to where you want. Now, what part of town do you live in?
I live 59th and Bell, basically.
Okay. 59th and Bell. Mike's Auto Tech. Well,
yeah,
he could
Kurtz.
Go to Kurtz, yeah. But you're away from Kurtz. Kurtz is at 19th.
19th and Bell,
yeah,
think.
19th Avenue and Bell. Yeah.
That would be fine. That would be fine. Also, I don't mind going.
Yeah,
you know,
call Kurtz. His service manager is a master tech, and his shop lead tech Eric is a master tech. And here's what you do. This works every time. You go in there and you say, I've got this noise, and I make a right turn, and I go up my sister's incline, and there's a noise at the back. And I'm told by everybody out there that no one's going to be able to find this noise. And when you might as well wave the red flag in front of the bull, because it works on all of us with hairy chests and guys who think that they know it all. That works on all of us. So if you say that to Jeff, the service writer, or if Eric's at the front counter, I promise you that they're going to give it their best. So I'd go to Kurtz if I were you.
Okay, but first I'll try and get that noise down pat.
Just do a little bit. You know, is it related to speed? Is it related to how tight you're turning? Now, your Hummer might have a limited slip rear end. And if you've had the differential serviced lately, maybe they didn't put the right fluid or they didn't put the additive in there. And when you get a GM posit traction and you make some hard turns on it, the tires will hop in the back, and that's because the clutches are locked up. The fixes do nothing more than add the additive to it, which eliminates the clutches from locking up and it allows a little bit of slip. So if you've had any kind of differential fluid change, flush, or anything over the last year, that might be a place to start.
Or maybe it's only got 60,000 miles on it, so maybe it hasn't been used enough.
Well,
I don't know, but
you could be right, but here's the thing. That answer to that question won't get us to the next step. Once we figure this out and fix it, then we're going to be able to back up and say, well, Rick, this is all your fault. So that's kind of how it works. All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Thank you very much.
Hey.
And Bob, you're up next. Thank you for calling back. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Hi, Rudy.
Hi.
You know, when you were talking about oil fill and My son has a 2014 GMC with a 5.3 liter, and the owner's manual says with oil and filter, it takes 8.5 quarts.
Yes, sir.
So when I put 8 quarts in, it checks, it fills it way to the top of the full on the dipstick. So what would you go by, the dipstick or the owner's manual?
I'd go by the dipstick. The dipstick is metered between the full and the add is 1 quart. And so I would fill it to the dipstick, make sure you do all that other silly stuff. I'm sure that it's on flat ground and you ran it for a little while to fill the oil filter up and all that kind of jazz. But yeah, I would go by the dipstick and I would go. Now, have you owned this vehicle since new or has he?
Yeah, brand new.
Okay.
And it's always, and the thing that bothered me, he had the free oil changes, you know, from the dealer, you know, and when he came back from the dealer oil changes, it was always up past the full mark. And I think they were putting 8.5 quarts in and it was over full.
Well, that certainly would be something that you could call the service manager, and you're never going to get to talk to the service manager, but you can certainly leave him a message. And I think that that's a perfectly acceptable. When we bring the, and you might want to have your son do this because he's the owner of the truck. Sometimes service managers get a little
touchy.
Thank you for that word, because the one that was coming out of my mouth wasn't as nice as that one. They get a little touchy because daddy calls or mommy calls or something like that. So it would be appropriate for your son to call and say, I'm a little bit confused because when you guys fill my oil up, my receipt says 8.5 quarts and it's always past the full mark. And because of it's under warranty, I would like you to check that to determine whether A, the dipstick or the tube is not the right one, or B, if it's something that we should back off a quart or a half a quart on. And then that way I can mark the filter appropriately. That's how we handle those kinds of things. We just write on the filter with a black magic marker for the next guy and say, this thing only holds 8 quarts or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. I'm just going by 8 quarts now.
So, yeah. Yeah.
You see that new Mobile One oil, that manual protection where they say you only have to change your oil once a year now?
Yes. Yes. There's limitations. There's an asterisk there. It's either 12 months.
2 months.
Or it's either 10 or 12,000 miles. And I think the extended is 12.
20,000, they say.
Oh, they do say 20?
20,000.
Okay.
Yeah. And they give you a warranty on your engine. But I just thought of you because now you're going to have people putting that oil in, and they're not going to check their oil for a whole year.
Well, that is, you're right, Bob. That is the problem. That is exactly the problem. And we're going to have people that pay a dear price for that. I was under the impression that Mobile Extended, and obviously I'm wrong, because I had been taught that the Mobile Extended cover cars from 12 to 15,000 because some of them are calling for a 15. There's definitely a one-year mark on that oil. I know that to be factual. But that's going to create problems for people that, and I tell people, like I think most everybody tells folks, is every other time you get gas, you should pull the dipstick and take a look at it. And most people will get to it, but some of the newer model cars have an oil level sender in the pan that it'll tell you that it's low.
1 minute.
So anyway, Bob, thank you very much for calling. And when we come back, Renee, remind me to tell them about the Audi that we did.
Okay.
All right. And then I also want to tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. Bob at Larry Harker's Auto has been around since 1967, and he's one of the best diagnosticians I have ever met. He is certainly in a class all by himself. You can challenge him with the weirdest problem, and time after time after time, Bob has been able to find it and fix it. So no matter what you have, vehicle maintenance, or you got auto emissions, or you've got a check engine light, or whatever, Bob at Larry Harker's Auto will service and repair both foreign and domestic cars there at 38th Avenue and Indian School. No matter where you're at in the valley, if you want one of the best diagnosticians, then Bob at Larry Harker's Auto might very well be a drive that you have to take. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're welcome to call 602-508-0960. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. I'm sitting here in front of the computer screen. We'll be right back.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got another hour here to talk about cars and trucks and motorhomes and just about anything you need. The female voice is sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. She's here to make sure I behave myself.
Oh, that's a tough job.
And it is.
It is.
Automatic Transmission Exchange has been at 40th Street and Washington since Jesus was a baby. And that actually was 1968. Phil is as old as that, and him and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. They do transmission repairs and replacements. However, they say that they probably do 3-to-1, 4-to-1, 5-to-1 on the replacement side. So he says not every transmission needs a replacement. Many of them can be fixed to complete operating performance with just a solenoid here or a new controller here or whatever. So if you live in Central Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange, again, is at 40th Street in Washington, and now they're open on Saturdays, so you could stop by and they'll drive your car for free. And on Saturdays, they're from 8 to 12. John, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, I have a F-150 2013 4x4, and I have a LT 285 16R 18 BFG. Well, on the tire itself, the max PSI is 80 with a 3,640-pound load, but everybody keeps insisting, including when I have my tires rotated, putting in 35 pounds of air.
Okay. What does the door sticker say?
Well, the door sticker has the P275s with 35 pounds.
Okay. All right. So these
when I bought the truck.
All right. The ones you have right now are 80.
Right.
Okay. What are you pulling? Why do you need 6,000 pounds of tire underneath the axle that probably has a gross of 4?
Mostly because when I go hunting, I'm into the sharp rocks, and I just need a stronger sidewall. Okay. I've had tires before.
Okay, fair enough.
It's the only reason I'm going that.
Okay, I think I would certainly, unless you're going to hunt, I think I would try 44, 45 pounds. I think you'll be comfortable. Okay. I think that's a reasonable amount. Now, you understand that if you wear the outer and inner ridge of the tire, that you're underinflated, and if you wear the center of the tire, you're overinflated. So you can literally read your tires and know whether you're under or over. I'm willing to bet that I'm within 5 pounds of where happiness is for you at 44 PSI. I think on an 80-pound tire, to drop it down to 35 probably gives you a really nice ride, but I would be concerned that the tire would be running too hot at 35 PSI on an 80 cap.
Everybody would ask my tire low, because half the time it looked like the tire was low.
Yeah. No, I think I'd go to 44, and I don't think I'd go higher than 55 until you want to go hunting, and then I'd take it up to the 80 like you said you did. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate that. Real quick,
Tim is next.
Let me tell my Audi story.
Okay.
The Audi guy brings his car in, and he says to us, it keeps telling me that I'm low on oil, and I keep adding oil, and the light doesn't go out.
Okay.
Okay. So we pull the dipstick, and it's like 40 quarts over full.
40?
Whatever.
I think you might be exaggerating. Just a tad.
I am. All okay. Right. Yeah. So he's over full. So we bring it down to the right level, and sure enough, the light's still there.
Okay.
So we figure out that there's a switch on the hood. Now, when the light comes on and it tells you you're low on oil, the computer is waiting for the switch on the hood to tell the computer that someone opened the hood, and then the light goes out. The programming, they're thinking, well, you're opening the hood to add oil. Well, this guy had already opened the hood 3 or 4 or 5 times, and he added oil each time.
So the switch was broken.
The switch was bad.
Oh, my gosh.
So not only was the switch bad, it was a big, expensive part.
Right.
So as good as we are, we took it apart, and we fixed it.
And MacGyver, I bet, fixed it.
And MacGyver fixed it.
Yeah.
And with a little dielectric grease and repositioning this one lever, then it was perfect. So we snapped it all back together, and we put some silicone on the outside to make it waterproof. We put it back in, and we told him, there's no guarantee on this.
Right.
We did our best, and this is what we think you should do. Mm-hmm. The switch was a whole lot more than what we charged him to fix it. I think we charged him $35 to fix it, and I think the switch was like $120 or something like that.
So that was a good gamble.
Okay,
yeah.
One other thing.
Okay.
Tim, I know you're there, but just let me get this other stuff out of the way. We had somebody that came over that had a bid from a dealer. Now, people hear me talk about my $75,000 technicians, and they probably come to the conclusion that we're really expensive, okay?
Okay.
The average, you know this, the average labor rate in our area is what?
119 or 20, I think.
Okay, and what's our labor rate?
118.
Okay, so we're I think we're better than the average, but we're actually a dollar under the average.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we're okay. But anyway, the people, we like this. Here is a list of things that are needed.
Right.
Put your numbers next to them. Now, I like it when they block out the numbers. Fine with me. I don't care.
Right.
So they told them it needed a brake flush for $136. We said no, but if it did need a brake flush, it was $120.
Okay.
$16 difference. They said it needed a power steering. This is a flush your wallet kind of thing. Power steering flush, $136. Ours is $115, and we agreed it needed it. Cooling system flush, theirs is $165. We saved them $60. The throttle body service, they're $253. We're talking profit here. And we said, it's not needed, but our throttle body's $85.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me give that to you again, just in case you missed it. $253, and ours is $85. But we didn't do it for two reasons. Number one, the throttle body wasn't dirty. Number two, the customer didn't have symptoms that would indicate that we have a dirty throttle body, mm-hmm. which is uneven idle, and there's some idle issues. Rear differential service, theirs was $200, ours was $120, it needed it. Battery service, they said $51. We said ours is $36. If it needed it, and we said, we don't know what they're talking about. Then their spark plugs, they beat us on this one. Spark plugs, they're at $495, we're at $517. So they beat us by $22 on a $500 bill. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, and I'm not counting the brake fluid flush it didn't need, the throttle body service it didn't need, the battery service. I'm not counting those. We're doing apples for apples. Theirs was $1,679.95. $1,679. Ours was $1,042. The difference, clearly $600.
Mm-hmm. Of things they didn't really need or price
well,
difference.
Well, we saved them $600 by doing what we did.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're very comfortable with that. So, the point of this is not to thump my chest. The point of this is when you get a bid from one shop, it's okay to take it to another shop. Sometimes if you hide the numbers, that's okay too. That mm-hmm. way you'll have something good.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard when you call around though. I don't know, because we'd like to see the vehicle. I mean, in this case, we knew that it didn't need some of the stuff. If they had called on the phone, we wouldn't really know if they needed it or not.
It's a bad idea to call on the phone.
Yeah.
And we can't do estimates. We don't do estimates over the phone.
Yeah.
We can't tell you, you know, what's... We can't tell you if you need shock absorbers. What you do is you make an appointment and you take your car in and you say to them, I'd just like you to look it over and here's a list of things I want to know what your opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
Most shops will do that for free. We don't have a rack fee anymore. So, or better yet, have them do it during an oil change.
Mm-hmm.
So spend $30, $40, $50, $60 for an oil change, depending on what kind of oil you use. And, oh, by the way, look at this list. Mm-hmm. I'm told I need it.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it's free for sure. Tim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning. I have a question. I bought in August of last year, my son, a 2003 Chevy Impala, and we thought it was a good car, and we just got news from our mechanic, not good news, that it's got low oil pressure and somebody abused the engine, so it's going to need a new engine, and looking about $4,000 for that. And He's actually going to buy the car from me, but I was thinking about like running an ad on Craigslist and just selling it as a mechanic special, and you know letting the people know up front that it needs an engine. But I mean, we put a new windshield in it. It's got a new battery. It's got really good AC.
Okay, hold on a minute. We need to back up.
No.
Stop. Stop. We need to back this train up. What symptoms do you have that suggest that it has low oil pressure or, as you said, somebody abused it? I want to know specifically what you've got that justifies those two diagnoses.
Well, we took it in last week to get it. It didn't pass emissions, and it needed an oxygen sensor.
Okay.
And then on the message thing on the dash, it came up low oil pressure. So he asked me if I wanted him to check into that, and I said yes. I don't want it to, you know, be a problem down the road. And they found out it should be at like 60 pounds, and it was at 40. And they looked into it further, and he found a lot of sludge in the engine, and that somebody had either been not doing oil changes or not enough oil changes. and maybe even running it low on oil.
Okay, now, stop. I don't agree with anything you said. And I know that you're regurgitating what he said. So what you're telling me is he told you that 40 PSI is too low and it should be at 60. And I want to tell you in no uncertain terms, that's bull.
Loney.
Thank you. That's bull loney. Okay. There is nothing. You don't have symptoms. You don't have problems. You've got an oil light that's coming on that probably means the oil pressure switch is bad because the oil pressure switch turns on the light. And after it gets a little dirty and it gets a little old, and sometimes they go bad. And when they go bad, you put a new one in. So he's telling you 40 PSI isn't acceptable. Let me tell you that the switches usually turn on the light between 12 and 18 PSI. So isn't 40 okay? And as far as the sludge is concerned, there's lots of cars out there with sludge. There is no relationship to abuse and sludge. I'll tell you where we see sludge. It's the people in Sun City and Ahwatukee and out there in East Mesa. They have short trips. They never get on the highway. And we never get the engine up to operating temperature, which boils the water out of the oil, and the water and the oil equals sludge. And there's a lot of cleaners that you could use to do that. So I don't agree that he has... Let me just put it this way. I don't have the ability to tell you that somebody's abused an engine with the information he has and he gave you. I don't agree whatsoever that 40 PSI is a substandard oil pressure in any environment from idle to 200 miles an hour. I don't agree. So I think I would just get a second opinion. But to answer your question, yes, you can go to Craigslist. Tell them that it's as is, and tell them that please have a used car checkover done by their mechanic. And it's, you know, that's it. It's as is. Please, Mr. Prospective Buyer, you're allowed. Tell me where to meet you, and I'm going to bring the car and have your mechanic check it out. That's what you do. It's not fair for you to downplay the car and take a beating on it based on his...
Wouldn't he have had to tear it down a little bit to find out sludge in the engine?
Or? You know, I don't have enough time to go into that, but there's a lot of questions there. If the car's all sludged up, then it should have low oil pressure because the screen on the oil pump's filled with jello.
Junk. Okay.
So, I mean, there's so many things here, and this is the first time he's ever had an oil light on, or he'd have said differently.
Yeah.
So there's lots of those questions that bounce around in this empty head. So, 602-508-0960, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Renee, my wife, is sitting here next to me. She's my conscience. She's the one that keeps me under control. And as you can tell, she hasn't done a very good job today.
I failed today.
I want to tell you something. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm a good storyteller. You know that.
Yeah, I know that.
And about half of what I say is the truth. And
I know that,
you go
too.
Ahead and tell them that. Yeah. But that's what makes a good story. But this is the truth. Harvey sends me an email, and he's got a problem with his Ford truck that doesn't start. I say to him, I'd like to talk to you about it because you know I hate to type. Mm-hmm. And I can't type with all my fingers.
No.
So he calls me, or I call him, and we're talking about this. And I said, I'm pretty sure that the neutral safety switch is out because sometimes when he hits the key, it doesn't start. And I said, you know, wiggle the shifter around and stuff like that. But I didn't ask him what I thought would be an important thing, and is there any play in the steering? So I said, where do you live? And he says, up in Cave Creek. And I said, okay, well, Air Parks Auto is close to you. I think you should go there, and they're certainly capable of – and I said, can you make it happen? He goes, yeah, I can make it happen. I said, okay, fine. So he sent me an email, and he said he took it to Air Park, and he says, your diagnosis was wrong, Mark, which it often is because we're talking on the radio. But he says they were able to fix it, and actually there was an intermediate shaft on the steering column, which is underneath the dash, that had come loose.
Okay.
And so that's kind of a dangerous issue because you'll remember not too long ago there was a man who backed his truck up to another truck to load stuff from one to the other. The truck somehow slipped into reverse and crushed him, and he later died. And that truck was inspected by us, and we found the intermediate shaft was very loose. And unfortunately, the conclusion was is everybody that drove that truck knew something was wrong with it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Harvey was a nice guy. So Harvey sent us some stuff from Suzanne's Hot Stuff in Cave Creek.
Yeah, I think that's his wife, it said.
Okay.
Their store in Cave Creek.
Okay, and it's in Frontier Town in Cave Creek. And he says that the store has been in the Valley's premier destination for hot sauces and many other chili-related products. And by the way, he said he sent some habanero sauce, and there was nothing in here from habanero. So tell me how the habanero sauce didn't end up in the box for me.
Yes, I think Andy might have... took that to try that too.
Oh, our daughter got to yeah. the package before her dad. Did yeah. she recognize that it said Mark Salem on the package?
She and
it
does. Did... I think she recognized you don't cook too much, so she or I will have to do the cooking with this stuff.
You know what? But... I already know how to do it. You know this this gourmet Southwest rub?
Yes.
Okay. How would you use it? Tell me.
Well, I'd put it on steak or
no.
something before you barbecue it.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Yep,
you could
wrong.
Put it inside your burger when you cook it.
Wrong.
Oh, I've read the directions,
no.
so I know what to do.
I went to the king dog.
Who's that?
Harvey.
Okay.
He said you put your meat inside of a plastic bag, you put a tablespoon of that, and you shake it all up, then you cook it. Cha-ching!
Huh? Okay, I think I said you put it on it. That's the same thing.
Well, yeah,
we
but you're
going to
sprinkle it on both sides. And then he does it much easier, much faster, much more efficient, and he uses less than you do because you're sprinkling it all over the meat on
Salem,
the grill.
Salem, how many times have you cooked?
Twice in my life.
Okay, there we go.
Anyway, so what else was there?
There was some dip for fruit and some dip for vegetables, and there was hot sauce, habanero sauce, and
yeah.
there's a little packet to make chili, and
okay.
all kinds of good stuff.
Well, I want to talk about these. This is a package that is named Dip, and I'm not allowed to say the second word. Dip.
And it starts with an S and ends with a T, so.
Okay, and it's like horse poop.
Right.
<okay? laughs> So it's Dip, and it's for fruit, a tasty dip for fruits and cookies, just add sour cream.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It is.
That's kind of cool. Anyway, we need to go up there because right. they've got some stuff that I think would fit our palate just fine.
Yes. Thank you very much, Harvey. That was really nice of you.
Harvey.
That's what I said.
Did you say Harvey? I thought you said Charlie.
Harvey.
Oh, my earphones are going bad. Anyway, his wife, Suzanne, owns it.
Right.
So he answers to her, that okay. poor son of a gun.
Like you answer
yeah,
to me.
Yeah. Yeah. People laugh a lot about how we talk about that you're Snow White and I'm Jack the Ripper. Would you say that that's a fair analysis of 43 years of marriage?
Well, yes, I guess I would. You've been saying that for all these years, but I'm not sure I totally agree with it.
The kids agree with it. All of our friends agree with it. They talk about how nice you are, how pleasant you are.
I used to be Snow White, and now I'm getting, I don't know.
You think that's
the Wicked
problem?
Witch. Maybe it's after 43 years.
And I tell this story. The girls used to say, Mom, can we go out tonight in high school and then go on the date with a football team? And my wife would say, go ask your father.
Oh, Mark.
And she never knew how to say no. The only person you've ever said no to is me. You've said yes to everybody else who's ever asked you anything, especially the kids.
That's...
And so in my defense, I was the no-go, and you were the yes-go.
Oh, okay. Whatever you say.
And then if they got into trouble, they'd call you. And what would you do? You'd turn around and take a poop on my desk and say, here, you take care of it. Yeah, that's my complaint. We need a counselor.
We do.
Okay,
yes.
11:26 after the hour. Have we got anybody waiting for us?
I don't think.
Oh, Taylor. We... Taylor. Good morning, Taylor. How can I help you?
Hey there, Mark. Love the show.
Thank you, sir.
Got a couple of few little things. Got a 99 Chevy Suburban, 160,000 miles on it. When I'm cruising down the highway, say, you know, 55, double nickel, and something goes on in front of me, and I let go of the skinny pedal real quick, and I hit the binders, like
okay.
just a real quick emergency-type stop. That brake pedal is hard. It's at the top, hard, and it does not compress. It does not slow down the vehicle. And for about probably a second and a half, which is, you know, quite a ways down the road before it starts to slow down. And that's only whenever I go from the skinny pedal to the binders real quick. Otherwise, it stops. You know,
okay.
Better.
All right. What motors it got in it?
The 350, and it's four-wheel drive.
Okay. Is it vacuum brakes or is it hydro booster? Do you know?
Yeah. It's vacuum brakes.
Okay. So it's got a real big booster, and the master cylinder hooks to this big round can. Yes?
Exactly.
Okay.
With a big vacuum line on it.
Okay. I would check the check valve on the hose that snaps into the booster. I'd want to run to make sure that you have the necessary 16, 18 inches of vacuum. I'd want to make sure that once the booster's charged that it's there. And I would make sure, and I would listen very carefully, charge up the booster, let it idle for 3 or 4 minutes, shut the key off, and then apply the brakes and count to five and let go, and then apply the brakes and count to five and let go. Here's what I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear no hissing when you apply the brakes. No hissing from inside the car. Now, if the radio's up or your wife's yelling at you, you can't hear the hissing anyway. So that's why I want you to just be quiet, start it up, let it idle for 3 or 4 minutes, shut it off, and then apply the brakes, hold it, 3 seconds, let go, apply the brakes, hold it, 3 seconds, let go. Like I said, if it's hissing, then the booster's leaking, and that would give you the hard pedal under the conditions that you just described. So that's the area I'd look at.
Okay, I appreciate that. Another thing is that the brakes are always kind of soft. Okay. Always kind of soft, you know, and the internet, thousands of people on the internet say the brakes are always kind of soft on those.
Okay. Vehicles. Well, let me ask you if you got rear disc or drum.
It's rear drum.
Okay. Well, if you never use the parking brake or ever back up kind of violently, you're not going to adjust those rear brakes. And so the very first thing I would do if I were you is, and most everybody will, wash and clean the rear brakes and adjust them up tighter than they are. And you'd be surprised that the success rate's almost 100% for a low pedal. So rear drums need to be adjusted up and cleaned, and that should take care of your problem. I think the odds are 75-80%. That will take care of your pedal, and it's going to bring the pedal up a lot higher than it is now anyway. All righty, I got to take a break. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You stay there. Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and we're going to do what we should have done last hour, and we're going to let Taylor finish his question. Taylor, let's do that real quick. What else did you have on your mind?
Yes, sir. When I got the truck, the brakes were horrible. The pads and the shoes were both about 90% there. I took off the front calipers and found that the slides were seized up, cleaned them up, lubricated them well, put it back on, went to the rear end, cleaned, adjusted everything, lubricated everything, and I even broke the little tab off the back of the backing plate so that I could adjust the rear brakes properly. And the brakes came up. They were twice as good as they were, but still soft.
Okay. Well, soft is kind of a judgment issue. And so if I drove it, I would say that it's not, and you drive it and you say it is. And you said this was a 3/4 ton Suburban, right?
And not the half ton Suburban, okay. but it's softer than any other brake car I've ever driven in
my
life.
All right. Well, that's kind of – so what you're telling me is you've done all this work and you still have a soft pedal, and everything you did didn't affect it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, no. It made it twice as good as it was when I first got the truck.
No, twice as good on height of the pedal height, right? But the softness
– twice as good.
Wait
on
a minute. Wait a minute. Let me finish what I'm asking you. So you said it, the pedal height was twice as good as it was, but the softness of the pedal, the feel of the pedal is the same before and after your work. Yes or no?
Kind of. Whenever I hit the brake before, I have to really push on it really hard for it to stop, and I went to the front calipers and found that the slides were speed.
I know that. Here's the problem is – you said that the brakes were like 90% there. So just for future reference, when the slides on the calipers are all hanging up like you found it, it's going to wear the outside pads at twice the rate of the inside pads. If the caliper's bad, it's going to wear the inside pad at twice the rate of the outside pads, just for future reference. So I'm proud of you that you figured out that the caliper didn't slide back and forth. But I'm going to tell you that when you adjust the rear brakes, it takes two people. So you put your wife, first of all, you put the car in a position where your wife can't run over you, because mine would do that. So I put the truck behind her and in front of her so she can't move it. You crawl underneath and you spoon it. Then she applies the brake pedal a couple of times, which recenters the shoes. Now, you've got it up in the air so you can spin it, and you spoon it again once or twice, and you say, hit the pedal, and then you let go, and you're spinning that rear tire. When you do that and you recenter the shoes, you're going to get a much better adjustment. But as far as your soft pedal is concerned, I can't fix soft. I can fix rock hard. I can fix that it's fading to the floor, but I can't fix a subjective soft. So unless it's fading to the floor or it's rock hard, you're on your own. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. I want to tell you about this Suzanne's hot stuff. Okay. This is a gift. First of all, that's a nice gift.
It was very nice.
Okay. It's something we've never received before.
Right.
Now, normally when you'd hear a place called Suzanne's hot stuff, you may not think that it's a gift or a chili store.
That's Mark would not think that.
You're right, and so would most men. Okay, so most men. But if you want to see what she's got, oh, and then her number. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
877-2-HOT-FOR-YOU.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And that further supports my position that this is a nice play on of words.
Right.
Is that right?
Sure.
Okay. Anyway, the website, if you want to go look at her products, which we've never received a gift like that. That's the reason why I'm talking about it, is because it's really nice.
Yeah.
It's Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Suzanne's with an S, hotstuff.com, uh-huh. Suzanne'sHotStuff.com. So if you want to do something special, like I said, I mean, this is something.
It'd be a nice gift, you bet.
People wouldn't say, oh, I already have one of these.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Which is what you say to me every single time I buy you something. You say, oh, did you get this out of my closet?
Wait. When was the last time you bought me a present?
Kurt's Auto Repair is at I-17 and Vail Road. Kurt's is a good guy. He is somebody you can trust. He's somebody that does a good job. But what makes Kurt's really exceptional is the two boys, Jeff, the master tech that runs the front counter, and Eric, the master tech that runs the floor. That's what makes Kurt special. Now, I understand that both of those boys were brought up around Kurt's. One of them is his nephew, and one of them is married to his daughter.
1 minute.
I wouldn't want to be married to Kurt's daughter and work for him. But then again, that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But the idea is those guys are really good at what they do. They are exceptional with customer service because that's coming from Kurt and his wife. Mm-hmm. But their technical ability is very high class. So if you live anywhere near Bell and I-17, then Kurt's is a great place for you to go. Do you have any other words of wisdom you'd like to share with us in a period of 30 seconds?
Nope, I don't. If you have a question or need to talk to Mark, I hope it's a nice question or a good question.
Hey, I want to tell you something. Listen to me. You can complain about Mark Salem all you want. What you have to remember is this station is owned by Salem Communications.
Yeah,
okay?
No relation, so, but okay.
Wait a minute. You don't know that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Why did you just snitch me off? Why couldn't you just go along with it, okay? It's Mark Salem, Salem Communications. You know what I'm going to do? Your mic's gone.
So,
nope, your mic is gone, and that's what's going to... When I'm making a joke, you're not allowed to interrupt me and tear the joke apart. My God. You know, the money your father paid me to marry you is looking pretty small right now.
It was small.
It was like $6 back in 19... When did we get married? 1974. Yeah, you were 6 and I was 40. That's what you tell everybody. That's really nice. Well, we'll be back. Oh, the lines are open, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my ex-wife, Renee. And I'm here every Saturday. She's not going to be. This is your last show, by the way.
No, you've said that before.
Oh,
I
know.
You just keep asking me.
I really mean
back.
It. I really mean it.
Okay, cool.
Okay, we're going to talk about somebody else who's been married a couple of centuries, and that's Brian and Thelma over at Thompson's Auto Repair.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they're not as old as we are.
No.
But Thompson's Auto Repair is a good shop because of Brian and Thelma. They're there every day. They watch out after their customers. They know right from wrong. They hire good technicians. They just know what it takes. And it's the symptoms. Give us the symptoms. We do our diag. Then we determine that this is what you need. We bid the repair. And under the best conditions, we're not a penny over the repair. That's what it's all about. So you can expect that in Mesa with respect to Thompson's Auto Repair. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. And for those of you in Mesa, there's only one shop in Mesa that has passed all the guidelines and passed all the hurdles that we put in front of them in order to be on our best car repair shops list. And Thompson's is the one that made it. So if you're in Mesa and you don't already have a shop, Thompson's is on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. George, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. I just want to extend some thanks for your attempt at helping my neighbor Gene with his starter.
Okay.
On his Toyota. Anyway, in addition to that, maybe 2 months ago, you had the lady on there from Philadelphia who had written a book about her experience in the transmission business.
Yes.
And I called in to ask if perhaps she remembered who the manufacturer was of the transmissions for the odd brands that don't make their own, like Hudson and Packard and so on, and Jaguar and so on. Well, it took me until a week ago talking to my brother to find out that it was BorgWarner. And boy, they are huge.
Oh.
Just amazing.
That is a company that I think 99% of the products they make are focused towards cars, and it's not likely that many of their products are available even to guys like me, because most of their products are going to be shipped to and used in the production lines. So I can still buy BorgWarner gaskets, and I can still buy certain parts from BorgWarner, but you are exactly right. When you talk about an automotive company that's been around a very long time, and in Mark Salem's world, makes a premium product at a very fair price, then BorgWarner is exactly that person. So you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Just wanted to call when you had a wide space between calls there.
Thank you very much. Thank you, George. Thank you very much. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you today, Bill?
Yes, Mark, I thank you for a very interesting program, and I wanted to ask you if you could tell me the difference with an Atkinson-style or Atkinson cycle engine compared to the conventional.
I never heard that before. An Atkinson.
Yeah, I've seen it in some ads. I think that Ford may be using it in parts of their cars. I'm not sure.
Okay. So is
Atkinson cycle, they say.
Okay.
Atkinson, I think, on spelling.
Okay. I frankly have never. Let me do it this way. If anybody else knows what that is, please call us at 602-508-0960, because I'm not familiar with that. I've never heard that word before, and you say it's predominantly on Ford products. Would that be correct?
I think I've seen it in reference to them.
Okay.
And also possibly Korean autos.
Okay. Okay.
Kia. Perhaps.
Okay. All right. I'm not familiar with that term or that. I know that we're struggling with the spelling, but there's the only two motors that I know of that are different is the rotary motor versus one that has pistons, and we've got double overhead cams, and we have direct ignition, and we have direct fuel injection, and we've got many different varieties of, you know, putting air into the engine, turbos and superchargers, and then spark and fuel and then timing and emissions and all these sensors. We have all that, but as far as I know today, with the exception of some hybrids that have small four-cylinder motors and then they have electric motors on top of it, I'm not familiar with just a name like that. So, you know, Bill, if you just stay on the line, we're going to be here for another 8 or 9 minutes, and hopefully someone will call in that can enlighten both of us about a question.
Greg will.
Greg will. Okay, Bill, you put Bill on hold for me, and let's go to Greg. Greg, help us out, buddy.
Okay. The Atkinson engine is a rotary engine that
Ford and Toyota uses in their hybrid cars.
Okay. So is it the correct pronunciation, Atkinson?
That's how I pronounce it.
Okay.
It's a Ford uses it in their C-Max, and the Prius uses it in the Toyota uses it in their Priuses.
Okay. So we're literally talking about a rotary engine that's very much like the Mazda rotary that we had 30 years ago.
From what I understand, yeah.
Okay. And when we talk about a rotary engine, we talk about a cylinder that's round, and we have this three-pointed rotor, and it, as it spins, it grabs fuel, and then it goes to the next third of the motor, and then it's ignited, then it goes to the next third of the motor, and the exhaust goes out. So we basically have intake, explosion, exhaust, intake, explosion, and so we're moving it around by using this big triangular piece of metal within this piece of pipe. I'm trying to draw a picture of it, but Greg, thank you very much. Thank you for calling in. And, Bill, I hope that answered your question. You had the word right. It's not something I've ever heard of. And so thank you for that. Thank you for bringing that up. When it comes
Barry is your next caller.
Okay, Barry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I enjoy your program every morning or every Saturday and learn things. And you never stop learning, do you?
And for me, too.
I'm 65 years old. I've been buying a lot of used cars for my family. They couldn't afford new ones and everything. I want to refer to the man who had the Impala with the sludge in the engine.
Yes, sir.
The comment I just want to make is when you buy a used car, especially something that might be 12, 15 years old, one of the main things is to open the oil filler cap and look in there. And if it has black crud, crusty-looking residue, sludge, anything like that, you just walk away from the car. And it is one of the 20, 25 things I look at when I buy a used car. And I'd just like to tell you, I have a young lady friend. She's in her 20s, went out with her girlfriend about 2 months ago and bought a used 2003 Toyota. It had crud in there without taking her uncle or me or someone with her to look the vehicle over. And it blew up in 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
From a fly-by-night outfit down on Buckeye Road. And I just want to make that comment. It's a good education, good step to take.
You're right. Let's talk about that sludge for just a minute. In the old days when we had a 180-degree thermostat, we never really got the motor over 200 degrees. And what we learned from that is if you remember, we used to do valve jobs at 50, 60, 70,000 miles, and we had to deal with sludge 100% of our lives. And when they came out with computerized cars and fuel injection, we went to a 195 thermostat. And what that did is it kicked our high temperature to 220. So when I'm standing in front of a bunch of college kids, I ask them, when does water boil? And rarely do they know the answer, which is 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 Celsius. So obviously, if we get the oil up to 220, we're going to boil the water out of the oil. Well, the PCV valve is going to suck that moisture out and send it into the exhaust pipe, and it's going to come out the back of the car. So today, we do see the sludgy motors, and it's for one of two reasons. Number one, some nut put a 180 thermostat in the car that doesn't belong in the car. And for whatever reason, they didn't like where the needle was at on the temperature gauge, so they put a 180 in it, and that will cause some major problems with respect to sludge. The second one is the car never reaches operating temperature, like Renee's mother. She just drives from her house to the liquor store and back, and it's like two blocks away.
Don't say that about my mother. She's never had a drink in her life.
And this is talk, and really and truly what's going on here, Barry, is I'm just digging a hole as deep as I can.
Yeah.
Once you start the hole, you might as well just dig her on down. So
I'll
anyway,
be burying you later.
Yeah. So that's kind of what happens. The people in Ahwatukee and East Mesa and Sun City, if they're short-term drivers, yeah. Here's the good news. The good news is if we can get that engine up to operating temperature and we get it out on the highway, it's kind of like a horse. You know, you can start walking him, and then you can start trotting him, and then you can start running him. And if he doesn't have anything, some huge malady, he'll get better, better, better. And we can also use some different detergents that will clean up the oil. And I'll tell you something else. There has been times, and I do not suggest anybody do this, but we've had sludgy motors, and we said to the customer, this could turn ugly. We want you to know that this could turn ugly. Ugly means that we're not going to develop oil pressure. This sludge is going to end up plugging the intake for the oil pump, where the oil pump sucks the oil out of the pan. Then we plug that solid, which means we're going to have to remove the pan, which is kind of good because we'll clean out all the sludge, and we're going to have to replace the oil pump. So this could get ugly. So you take, 3 gallons of diesel fuel, and you put it inside the engine with no oil in it.
Okay.
And then you just go drive it for a while. And you accelerate and decelerate and accelerate and decelerate because it is a good lubricant.
Mm-hmm.
So then you go back and you pull the drain plug, and the stuff that comes out of there kind of makes you sick. Now, you could do that a couple of times. Then you could put some cheap oil in it and drive it for 100 miles and then drain that out and do this and do that. And I've seen that be successful more times than a calamity occurs. But every once in a while, you'll end up taking 10 steps backwards, and it's ugly from that point on. But the upside is you got nothing to lose if you've got a sludgy engine. But you're right, Barry. That is part of looking at a used car, is pulling that oil cap out. Now, if we still have Barry, let me ask you this, Barry.
Yes.
If you got red milkshake, what does that tell you?
Red milkshake in the transmission fluid?
No.
The oil?
Oh, you're exactly right.
Oh.
Yes.
Right, okay. You said red milkshake. If I see milkshake, it's probably a leaking head gasket, manifold gaskets, something like that.
Okay.
Water getting into the oil.
Water. So if it's a vanilla, thick vanilla milkshake, then it's water. And if it's a thick red or strawberry milkshake, it's because the cooler in the radiator has sprung a leak and it's spraying transmission fluid into the cooling system. And then when you shut the car off, the oil pressure is low, so now we ship water into the transmission. So we have an exchange of transmission fluid into the cooling system, and then when you shut the car off, the cooling system still has 16 pounds of pressure, and it then squirts coolant back into the transmission. And the water will tear up the glue that holds the clutches together, and then we've just ruined the transmission. So those are the kinds, plus tailpipe test, plus a drive to make sure there's no vibrations, that the brake pedal is firm, it doesn't fade to the floor, and that it's kind of high up, that the air conditioning is cold. Those are the kinds of things. A used car check over at our shop is
$125,
and virtually every single time we've done one, we've been able to save the customer twice of what they paid.
Mm-hmm.
So we will identify problems that need to be dealt with, and more times than not, the customer will go back to the people and say, this is what you need to fix, and either they'll either fix it or they'll give them a discount for our bid.
Right.
And then that works out well.
Saves them money.
Yeah. Some lady came in not too long ago, and she took our list, and they gave her $500 off the car, which paid for all the repairs we had found.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if she ever brought the car back to us. That wasn't important.
Right.
But we did save
her
some money.
But a lot of shops will do that. A lot of independent shops have the used car check.
Yeah, used car checkover is what the terminology, I guess, would mm-hmm. be, is used car checkover.
Yeah. Yeah.
My email is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Mark is spelled with a K. Salem is like the cigarette, and also like Salem Communication, who owns this station. So mark@marksalem.com. You can send me an email, but please put your phone number in there, because I'll call you back on a blocked cell phone, and blocked for obvious reasons, because I can't take calls 24 hours a day, but I'll call you back and we'll discuss your problem. So give me the outline, and then tell me what we're going to talk about, and give me some symptoms, and then I'll call you back as soon as I can. So anyway, happy Easter to everybody. God bless you. God bless you and your families. And I hope this weekend is a good weekend for all of you. See you next week.